Blog Talk Radio.
It is the NFL Draft Preview Show by BackSportsPage.com and Real Sports Talk Radio. How's everyone doing today? It is the NFL Draft Preview brought to you, presented by BackSportsPage.com. This is Real Sports Talk Radio. My name is Ryan Stern. You can find me on Twitter at rsternbsp. Do we have John on the line?
Yes, I'm here. How are you doing today?
We are joined by special correspondent today, John Falcone. John, how's everything going?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm ready for the NFL draft, having some fun, scouting players.
Now we have a little bit of breaking news. Jason Cole of Yahoo has just reported that there is a deal in place for the New York Jets to send Darrelle Revis to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. No compensation has been given as of yet, but it's pretty safe to assume it's going to include at least first-round draft pick. John, what do you think this means for the Jets moving forward, especially when it comes to the draft?
Well, it's going to give them an extra pick in that first round and maybe some needs, hopefully address their pass rush. And then they're going to have to start thinking about a replacement for Revis. Being at number 13 will probably put them right around the right level to get someone like Xavier Rhodes or Desmond Trufant.
Now, this trade for the Bucs is pretty significant because of the division that they play in. They play against a couple real good quarterbacks. They play against Drew Brees twice a year. They have to face Matt Ryan twice a year and Cam Newton. They have almost totally revamped their secondary this whole offseason. They did bring in Deshaun Golson. And Revis really makes perfect sense for them. Now, I don't know if you think that pick number 13 in the draft, plus any additional picks, if there are any, if you think that's too steep of a price.
You gotta like weigh out that what you're getting with Revis is a tried and true product. You're getting something that's obviously been effective in the pro level, something that, you know, someone who was runner up to Defensive Player of the Year a couple years ago, and you know, kind of like what the Minnesota Vikings were saying a couple years ago when they traded for Jared Allen. You know, they're trading for a proven product with the insurance that what they're getting isn't going to bust, where there's that uncertainty with a draft pick and how they measure up in the pro game.
Right, and one of the things that now you're going to have to look at with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is, what are they going to have to pay Revis? Because you all know the reason that the Jets traded Revis is because they have no intention on paying him the money that he's requesting.
Yeah, that's a good question, because you don't know what you're going to end up paying Revis. He's obviously going to want a lot of money. He's obviously going to want to be paid top three. John, be quiet, please. Sorry, good. Little one. you're going to end up paying him top three, you know, at the position. And you don't know, they've got to think about paying Josh Freeman. They got to think about paying, Levante David, Doug Martin, some of these other young guys who are still on their rookie contracts. So, I mean, it might hamper them in the long run. So they have to think about that.
Right. Now, do you think that if now they're going to have to pay Revis all of this money, and this is the last year of Josh Freeman's contract. Do you think they may look to draft a quarterback this year in case they don't feel that Josh Freeman is the right fit moving forward? Then they have somebody that they can have under a controlled salary for a number of years.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely an option. You know, there's probably going to be some, I don't know about good quarterbacks, but decent quarterbacks available third and fourth round. You know, there's always been some talk out of Tampa about them not being happy with Josh Freeman and his progression. So, yeah, it's certainly a possibility that they start thinking about a replacement now.
I've never been too much of a Josh Freeman fan. He always feels like he needs to be doing more than he's doing, even coming out of Kansas State a couple years ago. I thought that he should have been a second-round pick.
Yes.
Tampa Bay did take him in the first, and with that first-round pick came a lot of expectations. And he has shown signs of being pretty good. But there just isn't the consistency that someone who needs to, who is expecting to be paid at the level he wants to be paid.
Yeah. And, like, this year he had a pretty decent year, but, you know, he's thrown to some really decent, you know, players out there with, you know, oh, man, I can't remember his name right now, the guy from Syracuse. And then the wide receiver they picked up from San Diego, Vincent Jackson, and Doug Martin in the backfield, and pretty decent offensive line there, too. So, stop it, Gia. Stop it. I'll be there in a minute. Inside in a minute, okay? Sorry.
All right, so now let's get into our actual draft preview. We're going to start off with letting everyone know that we will be joined by Garen Emig from Tulsa World to discuss a little Oklahoma Sooner football. We'll also be joined by Edgar Thompson of the Orlando Sentinel to discuss a little Florida Gator football and some of their draft prospects. Let's get into probably one of the more controversial positions of the draft this year, and that is the quarterback. This is really the first year in quite some time that there isn't one standout quarterback that's going to be head or one or two like you had last year. Guys just stand out above the rest to be that top three guy. Everyone seems to think, well, most people seem to think that Geno Smith is the top guy. He is not the top quarterback on my board. My board reads Ryan Nassib from Syracuse is my number one guy. I have EJ Manuel as my number two guy. Geno Smith is number three. Then I do have Mike Glennon, and I have Tyler Bray as my number five guy. I'm sorry, I have Matt Barkley as my number five guy. Tell me a little bit about what you think is going through Matt Barkley's head. I mean, last year, he sees Andrew Luck and RG3, so he says, let me stay in school a year and be that number one pick in the draft next year. And he just absolutely had a miserable season laden with inconsistency and injuries. What's going through Matt Barkley's head right now?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess he's got to be thinking, or at least I'm thinking, maybe he was given some bad advice a year ago or 2 years ago, like where he projected to go, like as a first-round prospect. I don't know if he ever really truly was a first-round prospect with his physical skills. I think he does have some very positive attributes. But I don't know. I'm guessing he's probably not super excited compared to what he thought he would be doing this year last time. Or, I'm sorry, this time last year.
All right. Give me your top five quarterbacks this year.
My top five quarterbacks, like you, I've got Ryan Nassib number one. I kind of view Geno Smith and Matt Barkley as kind of similar and almost the same in that they both throw that first 5 yards, you know, the slant passes and the screen passes and the little, you know, dink and dunk offense kind of stuff. They do a lot of that accurately, so I kind of see them similar in that sense, and also that they don't have a very accurate long ball. Geno is a little bit more athletic. He can maybe, you know, the read option better than maybe Matt Barkley could. So I have Geno ahead of him. So I have Geno and Barkley 2 and 3. I have Manuel number 4. Good size. Got a high ceiling for he might end up in pros. And then Tyler Bray as my number 5 quarterback.
All right. See, I have VJ Manuel up on my board. Higher than you because of his physical abilities. EJ Manuel doesn't make good decisions a lot of the time, but there are times where if he doesn't make the right decision, he has the physical ability to correct it. He's got a very Cam Newton-like build about him. And he will tuck the ball in and take off whenever he feels the need to. But I think his arm is one of the more underrated arms in the game, which is why combination I have him up as number 2. If EJ Manuel were a better decision maker in college, he may have been the number 1 overall guy. But it's his decision making that he's going to have to work on for him to be successful in the NFL. Now we're going to move into... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I think you made a good observation comparing him to Cam Newton and some of the same questions Cam had coming out that you still have with EJ Manuel.
All right. So now we're... Because of the way that the first round seems to fall... I don't think that there are going to be any running backs taken in the first round. So we're going to skip over running backs right now, and we're going to get into pass catchers. This is going to be your wide receivers and your tight ends. Which wide receiver, tight end, do you think is going to be the best of anyone in this draft when all is said and done?
The guy who seems to have the most athletic ability and raw talent really seems like Patterson from Tennessee. He really just can. It looks like he can do anything on tape. You know, running even running the ball from the backfield on reverses and things like that. I mean, he's big, he's fast, he's strong. You know, he can catch with his hands, but he's very raw. You know, he's only played 1 year at the at the higher level. You know, he doesn't have a lot of, you know, experience, you know, running routes or running precise routes and things like that. So I think he's got a very, very high ceiling. I think he could possibly be the best, you know, receiver to come out of this draft. But there are definitely questions about him.
Right. Cordarrelle Patterson is probably the most physically gifted of all of the receivers when it comes to height, weight, and speed. He's got a great mold to be an NFL wide receiver. the only problem that I see with him is he doesn't do enough to get open. Unless he's running past people. I mean, for some reason, he sort of reminds me a little bit about Devery Henderson from the New Orleans Saints. He's going to catch long touchdowns at some point during the year. His consistency of being the good route runner, of making smart decisions, and also blocking. He hasn't shown to be a great blocking receiver. And it's funny that Tavon Austin, who I have ranked as my number one wide receiver, is 5'8". He's got a very Steve Smith-like build to him. I think he's a better blocker than someone who is of Cordarrelle Patterson's size, and that's one of the reasons why I have Austin. As my number one guy. My top five pass catchers are, I have Tavon Austin of West Virginia, number one. I have Tyler Eifert, the tight end out of Notre Dame, number two. We're going to go with Cordarrelle Patterson, the wide receiver from Tennessee, number three. Despite his slower time in the 40 during his pro day, I am going to go with Keenan Allen, the wide receiver out of Cal, as my number four guy, and I will have Zach Ertz, the tight end out of Stanford, as my number five pass catcher on my board. What do you think about Tyler Eifert and Zach Ertz? I think there is a great difference between the two of them. I think Tyler Eifert has secured himself as by far the number one tight end in the draft, and I think he is on his own tier. I think there are a couple other tight ends that are on the second tier, topped off by Zach Ertz, but I think Eifert is clearly higher above him.
Well, Eifert at the at the combine definitely showed better. He had the better 40 time, and you know, he's made the progression over his college career, starting off as a wide receiver and then putting some weight on and becoming a good solid tight end. I definitely think he's within, you know, the top 40 players of this year's draft, and definitely a first round pick. Coming out this year. Zach Ertz, I don't know a whole lot about. I know that he's definitely the number two tight end this year. But I think Eifert's definitely set himself apart from all the other tight ends in this year's draft.
So we'll go a little bit deeper into the wide receivers, because it is one of the deeper positions this year. We do have Robert Woods, the wide receiver from USC, who started out as being looked at maybe in the end of the second round to now possibly being at the end of the first round. He was the established guy at USC, and then they have Marquise Lee come in, and Marquise Lee, as a freshman, was just putting up these insane numbers and making people forget about how good Robert Woods was. I think a lot of Robert Woods' workouts have brought his name back to prominence, and I love him as a fit in Houston. I would love to see him play opposite Andre Johnson.
Yeah, I really came away impressed with Robert Woods. When I was watching a video of Matt Barkley play, I just remember, like, watching these guys catching the balls they're throwing and being really impressed with both Marcus Lee and Robert Woods. I think his route running is really well. I think he's got great hands. He's a quick player. He's probably not the fastest player, but he's definitely impressive. I think he could play really well any team that's employing like a West Coast offense, any team that's going to ask him to, run. I think he could run like the whole root tree for the West Coast offense, and that's a Houston being a team that does run the West Coast offense, probably one of the purest West Coast offenses in the NFL right now. That would be a great fit for him, I think, at the bottom of round one.
I completely agree. Robert Wood really stuck out to me, and again, I did the same thing as you. I was trying to watch some film on Matt Barkley. And as I'm a Notre Dame guy, so I'm very aware of what goes on at USC, being the rivals that they are. And I always knew that Robert Woods was pretty good. And like you said, I went to watch a little bit of film on Matt Barkley, and Woods just seems to do everything right. He's not going to have the most he doesn't have Mike Wallace speed. He doesn't have the size of Calvin Johnson, but he's just solid in everything that he does. And now we're going to I want to talk a little bit about Keenan Allen. Keenan Allen, is there a more perfect clone to Anquan Boldin than Keenan Allen?
Yeah, he's a nice player. He's another guy I really liked watching videos of him play. What I didn't realize is he had a knee injury in 2011, and then he's been slowly coming back from that. Something that may have played a part into him running a slower 40 time. Because when you see him play, he's definitely got speed on the football field.
He plays faster than the 4.71 that he ran.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, he's a nice player. He's got good hands. He can run solid routes. Definitely an ideal guy to play West Coast. He's physical.
I see him as a little bit of a bigger version of Victor Cruz. Because he runs the slant very well, he runs the curl very well, and he has the ability to break one tackle and break it. Break off a touchdown. He did that a couple times this past year where he ran slants and broke a tackle and it went 7 yards for a touchdown. So I like the comparisons to Anquan Boldin because of the great route running, the great hands, and the size. His speed coming out of some routes isn't as fast as some others, but when he hits that second, third gear, there aren't many players that can bring him down, especially considering his size.
Yeah, and I think he'll be a great player in the NFL. I think he'll do just fine.
All right. Now we'll get into the running backs right now. Do you agree with me that you don't see any running back being taken in the first round?
Yeah, nobody's really probably the top guy is Eddie Lacy from Alabama. I mean, he doesn't have a whole ton of speed, but he's got some vision. He's got some ability. Outside of him, really, there's not a lot of other players to even be in that, second round. I think Eddie Lacy's probably a second round pick. But it's a pretty weak year for running backs.
I do have Eddie Lacy as my number one guy. But I think there isn't a huge drop-off between Eddie Lacy and my two and three guys.
I do have Monty Bull from Wisconsin as my number two. Le'Veon Bell from Michigan State as number three. Giovanni Bernard from North Carolina as number four. And maybe the most intriguing of all the running backs this year, in my opinion, is Jonathan Franklin from UCLA. He's 5'11", 225. So he's got a pretty good combination, because you don't want your running backs to be super tall, because you want them to have a lower center of gravity. Mm. Now, 5'11", I'm sorry, 5'10", is probably about the average size. But he ran a 4.49. If you're going to be 5'11", in your 220s, and run a 4.49, and be as physical as he is, and play for a school like UCLA, where they always seem to produce good running backs. I mean, Maurice Jones-Drew, who I still feel is the most underrated running back in the game, even though he's one of the best. He reminds me a little bit about a bigger version of, Maurice Jones-Drew.
Yeah, and, I was just going to add that he's shown to be a good pass blocker.
Yeah.
In that offense, and that's something that's definitely going to help him in the pro game, like get some playing time.
There is a lot of people have Le'Veon Bell and Monty Bull interchanged between 2 and 3. They're similar physical bodies. Le'Veon Bell is bigger than Monty Bull. I think Monty Bull runs with a purpose. You don't break the all-time NCAA record for touchdowns by a running back without running with a purpose. My only concern is that, especially with the school that he came from, is he another Ron Dayne? Giants fans know about how when Ron Dayne came out, there was the thunder and lightning with him and Tiki. And the thunder seemed to go away pretty quickly with Ron Dayne.
Oh, yeah.
But I, just watching him run, I don't see that falling, the fall off that Ron Dayne had in Monty Bull. I love the way he runs, especially inside the 5-yard line. There weren't many times this year when he gets the ball on the goal line that he doesn't get in.
Yeah, he could definitely help a team in the red zone. Probably sets up well as you know, in a tandem with another running back to help carry the load. You know, maybe another thunder and lightning combination is going to happen somewhere else in the NFL. Hopefully they have better better results than the Giants fans had a couple years ago, especially since we passed on Sean Alexander.
Now, if that wasn't one of the bigger screw-ups, and the Giants have been known, especially over the last 15 years, to be pretty good drafters. Although a lot of that was when Jerry Reese took over. But Ernie Accorsi knew what he was doing. And but the fact that they passed up on Sean Alexander, who was one of the top guys coming out of college that year, but it was Ron Dayne because of the numbers that he put up. That he broke Ricky Williams' all-time record for rushing yards the year after Ricky Williams set it.
Yeah, they're actually, if you think about it, they're I mean, Ron Dayne was a bigger player, like a heavier player. But, I mean, some of these things that you're saying about the two guys, pretty similar. I mean, they both set records for touchdowns. They were physical runners, between the tackle runners, both coming out of Wisconsin. So,
and when you look into Le'Veon Bell, of course, what's going to stick out is the hurdle run. And for a guy who is 6'1", 230, he's able to hurdle defenders, and he did it, I think, two times this year, where he hurdled a defender and then broke it off for a touchdown 50 yards after leaving his feet. I think that he needs a better offensive line because I don't see his vision being as well as Monty Bolt's is.
Yeah, and considering like Le'Veon Bell was pretty much the focal point of the offense there at Michigan State, for him to come out and play well, run up almost, what does it look like, 1,800 yards, 1,793 yards. That's a pretty good year, you know? And, he's another guy similar like to Eddie Lacy and to Monty Ball, where they're, between the tackle runners, probably, you know, good, red zone runners and part of a tandem in the NFL.
Now, the running back who I'm probably intrigued most about where he goes is going to be Marcus Lattimore out of South Carolina. If there wasn't a more... I know this is coming off the Kevin Ware injury that we just saw in the NCAA tournament, but if there wasn't a more stomach-turning injury in college football this past year, where Marcus Lattimore dislocated his kneecap, I think it was against Tennessee. His leg when it got hit looked like it was rubber, and when he's lying on the ground, you actually saw the kneecap on the side of his knee. And that's coming off him having a gruesome injury the year before on his left knee. So Marcus Lattimore, the first months of the past two seasons have been almost record-setting numbers. The kid is a great running back. Can he stay healthy at the next level?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you got to be like, who's going to take a chance on him, considering these two devastating injuries, especially this last one? I mean, someone will likely draft him this year. I don't know.
I
get scared by those injury guys.
Yeah, I see one team as being an absolute perfect fit for him, and that's the San Francisco 49ers.
Okay.
You're looking at Frank Gore maybe having 1 or 2 years left. You do have LaMichael James and Anthony Dixon, even though Dixon hasn't really panned out to be much, but you do have LaMichael James and Anthony Dixon behind Frank Gore. It just seems to be a perfect fit for San Francisco because they can IR him. They have the most picks of any team in the draft. So, and with a team that doesn't have a whole lot of salary cap flexibility, to be able to draft him, IR him, just seems to make perfect sense. And then when Frank Gore is done, you have someone who is very similar to the running style of Gore.
Yeah, and Gore himself coming off a pretty gruesome injury there in college and, you know, being able to rehab it and take some time and eventually turn into one of the best players in the NFL. Yeah, that sounds like a great fit. considering, you know, like you said, he's maybe got 2 years left, Gore being, you know, an effective every down player. That sounds like a great fit.
All right, let's jump into probably the position that nobody talks about, that unless you're at the front office level, and that's offensive linemen. This is one of the probably going to be one of the more precedent-setting drafts when it comes to offensive linemen. I can see 6 to 7 offensive linemen coming off the board in the first round.
This year's draft, like, it's all about the trenches. The defensive linemen, the offensive linemen, I mean, they really, they're the best prospects of this year's draft. I mean, skill positions can really take a back seat this year.
Now, Kansas City has the first overall pick, and it seems to be the given that it's going to be Luke Jokel, the offensive tackle out of Texas A&M. Do you like that fit for Kansas City?
Yeah, Jokel's an athletic guy. He's a solid pass protector. He's played a left tackle in a major conference. You know, he's strong enough. He's quick enough. He's got good feet. He can mirror. Going into that conference or that division where he's going to have to play against Von Miller, they definitely need to have the best left tackle they can get. And I really think that he's an upgrade over Brandon Albert. And if they're able to keep Brandon Albert and move him to right tackle, I think it would be really, really good pick for the team. So, yeah, I think Dokel number one to Kansas City is a great fit right there.
Now, you mentioned Brandon Albert. There were reports earlier this week that the Miami Dolphins were given permission to talk to Brandon Albert. Now, Miami lost Jake Long to the St. Louis Rams, and they are in need of a left tackle. They do have Jonathan Martin, but I definitely see Jonathan Martin being a better fit on the right side. Brandon Albert has already come out and said he wants to play on the left side. If the Chiefs go out and draft probably either Luke Jokel or Eric Fisher, they're going to want to groom them right away as the left tackle and move Albert to the right side. So I see this being a perfect fit for player and team when you're looking at the move to the Dolphins.
Are you talking about Albert or are you talking about Jokel?
Yeah, Albert to the Dolphins.
Yeah, and I mean, then it frees the Dolphins up to address other needs when their pick comes. You know, it's not likely that they're going to get Lane Johnson, you know, where they're picking. So if they're able to trade a second-round pick to pick up Albert, it'd be ideal for them.
All right. Now you look into Eric Fisher. Eric Fisher is a guy out of the MAC conference from Central Michigan who doesn't get any publicity when it comes to the national spotlight. And Eric Fisher comes in and just absolutely wows everybody with his size, his strength, his footwork. My only issue with Eric Fisher is that the competition he played against isn't anywhere near the competition he's going to play in the NFL, and whether or not he's ready to face the Jason Pierre-Paul's of the league, or he's going to be in the AFC West. If he gets drafted by the Chiefs, he would be in the AFC West, where he would have to face someone like a Von Miller. I don't know if he's ready for it. A lot of scouts seem to think he is, but tell me what you think about Eric Fisher.
Well, he's a big guy. He's 6'7". He's very, very strong. He's very, very physical. He has all the things you want out of a left tackle. You already addressed, you know, the quality of his competition. That's definitely something someone needs to think about. I definitely agree with you. I think maybe throwing him into the fire at left tackle, especially in the AFC West, might be a little bit more than he's capable of doing right now. You're risking maybe burning him out. I personally, what I like to see for Eric Fisher is to see him go number four to Philadelphia, where he could be the right tackle and sit behind Jason Peters, learn the position, and then as Peters, you know, plays out his contract and moves on, can move Fisher over to the left tackle, and he'll be a little bit more experienced in the NFL and ready for the position.
Do you see him being a good fit for Jacksonville at two?
Yeah, that's another place where they already have a left tackle in place. They've got Eugene Monroe, who's been dependable. He's not been spectacular, but he's been solid, and he's been dependable, and he's played the position since he was drafted there. They could move Fisher there to right tackle and let him develop. And then if they feel when Britton was the bust, he got released. When Monroe's contract's over and, you know, they take a look at the finances, because that's the big time decider in the NFL is the finances. They want to move Fisher over to left tackle because it'll be much more affordable, considering he'll be still on that rookie contract.
And the consensus number three guy on most people's boards is Lane Johnson out of Oklahoma. We will be joined in a couple minutes by Garen Emig of Tulsa World to talk a little bit about Oklahoma. The Oklahoma left tackle, as well as quarterback Landry Jones. But Lane Johnson, I mean, what a ride this guy's been on. He was a quarterback in junior college. He comes over to Oklahoma, and they have him start out as the tight end. Then they move him to defensive end, and then they had a need at right tackle. So they say, you know what? You're athletic. Let's put you there. He puts on about 70 pounds and has a pretty good year as a right tackle. Now 2012 comes along, and they have a need at left tackle. They move him over to left tackle. So now it's 5 years he's playing five different positions. And we all know left tackle is the blind side of most quarterbacks, the ones who are right-handed throwers. So he comes out and just has an absolutely dominant season as a left tackle at Oklahoma, and then has a combine which Mike Mayock called the freakiest workout he's ever seen in his life. And here you have a 6'6", 300-pound kid running a 4.72 40. If you take out Teron Armstead from Arkansas Pine Bluff, who ran a 4.71 this year, that's the fastest time ever run by an offensive lineman in the draft. Lane Johnson, I think, when all is said and done, is who we're talking about as the best offensive lineman of anybody in this draft.
Oh, yeah, I certainly agree. I love Lane Johnson. I'm just a big fan. He's my number two tackle behind Jokel. I like him a little bit more than Fisher because he's got these fantastic feet. When you watch him as a left tackle, I mean, he's just I mean, stride for stride with the pass rusher. He is he's you know, left and right lateral movement is fantastic. He maybe needs to get a little bit stronger in run blocking, but I feel like it's easier to teach someone to get stronger, have them work out in the weight room, than it is to teach them to have great feet. I mean, he's a natural athlete. You already addressed him five positions, 5 years, you know, 4.7, 140. Like, I mean, he's got everything he needs to be an athletic left tackle in that same, you know, in that same light as, you know, like a Jason Peters or something, guy who's played multiple positions, a former tight end, fast, athletic. Yeah, I think Lane Johnson's fantastic. Being here in Philadelphia, I've heard a lot of radio programs, and I've heard a lot of talk about Johnson coming in at number four to the Eagles. They brought him in for an interview, I think, late last week. And so so that's another option there, number four for the Eagles. And I just want to say, because I've brought up the Eagles twice now, I'm definitely not an Eagles fan. I just want to make that clear. I live in Philadelphia. I'm a Giants fan, but I'm not an Eagles fan. I just want to make that clear to everybody.
No, I see him being a perfect fit, Lane Johnson being a perfect fit for Arizona at seven. I don't see any way he makes it there. I think if Arizona wants one of those top three tackles, they're going to have to trade up to get him.
Yeah.
One, because
yeah, they got to get up ahead of Philly and Detroit.
Right. So, and we're going to have our live first round mock draft coming up in the second hour of the show. We're not going to have any trades. We're just going to do a straight mock. But I think a perfect trade partner for Arizona will be Oakland at number seven. Oakland doesn't they don't have a whole lot of draft picks this year. I think it's a way for them to get some more picks and probably still get the guy that they're eyeing on. I think Sharif Floyd, and we'll talk about the defense in a little bit, and we'll actually talk to Edgar Thompson of the Orlando Sentinel about Sharif Floyd. But I think Sharif Floyd is a perfect fit for Oakland at three. I think if they trade back with Arizona, Arizona can come up and take either Fisher or Johnson at three, whichever they feel is best fit for their system. And I think if Oakland slides back into seven, I think they can still get Sharif Floyd there. If and you said that you had Lane Johnson ahead of Fisher on your board.
Yeah, I do. I feel like he's going to be an immediate impact player at the left tackle position. I feel like he's only going to get better in the next few years, and I just think he's got really good ability in pass blocking. I think Eric Fisher, although I really like him also, he has more work to do in pass protection than Lane Johnson does at this point in their careers.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the top two guards that are far and above pretty much any other guard that any other guard combination that we've seen in the draft. There
yeah,
has
since maybe like
never
Steve
been.
Hutchinson. I don't think there's. I'm sorry, I interrupted. I was just saying like. I was just saying that we probably haven't seen a guard like this since Steve Hutchinson. And there's two of them.
Absolutely. Right. There has never been two guards taken in the top 15 of the draft, and there are quite a number of people that think that two guards are going to be taken in the top 10. We're looking at Chance Warmack out of Alabama and Jonathan Cooper out of North Carolina. There is a big difference between the two, because I think if you run a man scheme, Chance Warmack is your guy. If you run a zone blocking scheme, Jonathan Cooper is the guy because of his athletic ability.
Yeah, and Cooper, he threw up the bar quite a few times at the combine, so he's definitely got the strength to play the man scheme also. I think he's a little bit more versatile than Chance Warmack. They have Cooper number one, more like 1A over Warmack, 1B. I think they're both fantastic prospects. I think they could easily both go in the top 10 just for their talent, you know. Maybe I should say they're top 10 talents, maybe not top 10 picks. But, yeah, they're great players. You know, they're definitely definitely you can plug them in right away and let them just play for the next 12 years, not have to worry about them.
Right. Now, see, I see picks 7 through 10. You're looking at Arizona at 7, the Bills at 8, the Jets at 9, and Tennessee at 10. All four of those have a need at guard. Arizona has needs across the board on the offensive line, but they do need help at guard as well. So when you're looking at four teams that need a guard, there's a pretty good chance that that two of them get taken in the top 10. I think Chance Warmack's best chance at being drafted in the top 10 is at Buffalo. It's a cold weather city. They're going to want to be physical in the trenches, and I think the Buffalo Bills are the only team of those four in the top 10 that need a guard that he fits better with. I do think Cooper fits better in at Arizona with the Jets and with Tennessee.
Yeah, considering Doug Marrone is the coach there in Buffalo, and he was the offensive line coach for New Orleans, where they drafted Jerry
Evans.
Yeah, and I mean, Chance Warmack definitely looks like a Jerry Evans, you know, big and physical and stout at the run. So, so I think Buffalo at 8 would be a great place for Chance. Also 7, you know, with Arizona. New York Jets lost both of their guards, their starting guards from last year, so they have a need. Hutchinson retired in Tennessee. Even though they brought in Leviter, the right guard is still open. So, yeah, you could definitely see the first two guards go in the top 10 this year.
Yeah, and then even you look at 11 at San Diego. San Diego definitely needs help on their line as well.
They lost Vasquez this year.
Right. A little deeper into the offensive line, you see DJ Fluker, the right tackle out of Alabama, who is gaining a lot of momentum as being someone who's worthy of the top 15 pick. And he's been going up and down my board for quite some time, but he's always been the number 4 tackle. I think DJ Fluker, if he reaches 19 at the Giants, I think that that'll be it. I think he'll come off the board then. I think he's a perfect fit for what the Giants are looking for on the offensive line. This way they'll be able to move David Deal back to his almost like a rover spot, where if they need him to play 2 down at left guard, he can play there. If they need him to play a 3rd down at right tackle, he can play there.
I think it's a great fit for the Giants at 19 if he reaches there.
Yeah, Fluker, I like, you know, you brought up the Giants. When I watched Fluker on tape, I thought of Kareem McKenzie, you know. He's just a fantastic run blocker. He's perfect fit for the right tackle position. I mean, Kareem McKenzie, I mean, us Giants know he played right tackle for us. We won a Super Bowl with him. But he retired, and, I mean, we have Beal there to replace him. He hasn't played so well the last 2 years. So DJ Fluker to the Giants. It's definitely a fit. I don't personally see Fluker that high. I think he's a fantastic run blocker. I just don't like him so much in pass protection. He can definitely be beaten to the inside. He's not as fast as you'd like for, you know, an outside tackle. He's not going to be a left tackle in the NFL.
Right, which is why I think you can get away with him playing the right tackle, because the more athletic players that you see rushing the quarterback are going to come from the blind side.
And you'll have a tight end to the far side to help
right,
out.
Exactly. there aren't many teams that have some of the defensive end combinations that we've seen come out of the Giants the past couple of years, where they can throw three or four players at you that would be starting right defensive ends on almost any team. So I think that he is by far the best right tackle on the board when it comes to being designated at that one position. But there is one guy that is making his way up a lot of boards who I personally love because of his versatility, and that's Justin Pugh out of Syracuse. He's a guy that has played all three spots. He's played tackle, guard, and center. And I think he's going to probably be sort of similar to Barrett Jones out of Alabama, but on an even higher level than that.
Yeah, I'm not super familiar with Justin Pugh. From what I read, he's 6'4", so he's a little bit undersized for the offensive tackle position. But, you know, what's his name? Walter Jones was 6'4" for Seattle, and he's going to the Hall of Fame.
Right.
So,
I love that. That's a position where you say 6'4" is undersized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. but you know that another guy I like in the tackle position or guard position is Kyle Long. And in my mock drafts, I'm thinking, what about him for the Giants? Because the Giants have, they have needs at both, left guard and right tackle. And that's something that Kyle Long definitely do. He doesn't have a whole lot of experience.
He can do either one. Yeah, Kyle Long can definitely play either one of those two positions. The only thing is that unless the Giants have him rated super high on their board, the Giants are a best player available team.
Yeah.
And unless he's in their top 20, which as much as I love Kyle Long, I have him in my top 35. I don't have him in my top 20. And I just, unless the Giants trade back, which is very possible. Jerry Reese does not like to trade up because he values his draft picks more than life itself. Jerry Reese has shown that he can make more out of draft picks than almost any other team. Unless you're looking at what the Colts did last year, but the Colts were also in a different position than the Giants, having the first pick in each of the rounds.
Mm-hmm.
But the Indianapolis Colts got a lot of production from their rookies from the first through the seventh round, and that's something that you tend to see Jerry Reese have as well.
Yeah, well, the Colts did a great job last year. you know, Jerry Reese's first draft, 07 with the Giants. I mean, they went to win the Super Bowl, and I mean, five or six of those guys, you know, on the team up until last year. I mean, Ahmad Bradshaw was a seventh round pick, and you know, they've gotten a lot of that first draft class he had. I mean, they've gotten so much out of all of those guys. So, although I've got a lot of admiration right now for Ryan Grigson in Indiana. Let's see how he does in a few years. Let's let the test of time dictate how well he is as a general manager. Jerry Reese right now head above everybody else.
Scott Pioli, who I was listening to on Sirius this past week, called Jerry Reese the top GM in the game right now. And
yeah, absolutely.
I know that in New England, I mean, they don't really have a GM because it's all run by Belichick. But when you're looking at the teams that don't have their GMs as their coaches, I think there's absolutely no one that gets more out of who they bring in than Jerry Reese. There is one player that is going to need to step up, and I know Jerry Reese has come out and been critical of him, especially because of his inability to stay healthy, and that's Marvin Austin, the defensive tackle out of North Carolina that they took with their second pick in the 2011 draft. Here's a guy who they picked high because of his ability, even though he missed a full season due to a suspension at North Carolina. So that's one thing to look into. As we transition into the defensive side of the ball for this year's draft, let's get into the defensive line. Boy, what a year this is for defensive linemen. There's especially defensive tackles. This may be the deepest draft for defensive tackles I've ever seen. I mean, there's a possibility you see five defensive tackles come off the board in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, there's some really, really talented players at the defensive tackle position. I mean, 10, 11 deep, you know, like all of them top two rounds possibly.
I released my my last two round draft, and I had eight defensive tackles come off the board in the first two rounds, which I believe that was a record. That would have been a record. I love listening to people talk about Star Latulele from Utah. Do you think he fits better as a three technique, which is a defensive tackle on a 4-3 team, or as five technique, which is a defensive end in a 3-4?
I think he would. I'm gonna kind of cheat on this answer. I'm gonna say I like him as a three technique and a 3-4, such as like what Wade Phillips runs, where it's like a one gapping 3-4 end. That's what I kind of like him the most. I like him in the 3-4 because he's you know, solid run protector. He definitely has explosive movement to get after the passer. But I'm a 3-4 guy. I love the 3-4 defense. And I want to keep him able to rush the passer. So I'm going to cheat on my answer and kind of go both ways.
I'm a little different than you, although I do love the 3-4. I think he fits in best as a defensive tackle on a 4-3 team. I think if he's able to draw a lot of single coverages, which most defensive tackles do,
he's going to be absolutely dominant. I think he's going to be able to beat most guards in the game off the ball. If he sees time as a defensive end in a 3-4, I think he... I don't know if he has enough explosiveness when it comes to that. The guy who is probably being talked about least of any of them, who may end up being the best of all the guys, I love Sheldon Richardson out of Missouri.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a great player. And a lot of the top guards all coming out this year, a lot of the top guards listed him as the hardest person to block. You know, he's tall and he's lean. He's explosive. He's strong. He's run strong. He's, you know, sound defensively. He's a very solid player.
Those are my... my top three, with Sharif Floyd being one, Star Lotulelei being two, Sheldon Richardson three. I do have Sylvester Williams out of North Carolina as my four. And I have someone who is probably going to be a nose tackle in most 3-4 systems. I love Jesse Williams out of Alabama. Here's a guy who came from, I believe, from Australia.
Yeah, he's an old Aussie rules football player.
Yeah, and I mean, he's 6'3", 323, and is one of the better movers. He occupies space. He can get off the ball. I have him rated higher than a lot of other people do.
Yeah, I actually have the same top five for my defensive tackles: Floyd, Lotulelei, Richardson, Sly Williams, and Jesse Williams. You know, I'm thinking, you know, with the Aussie rules, you know, football, where they do a lot of punting and stuff like that, like the players do, maybe Jacksonville decides to overdraft him at number two and take Jesse Williams.
When you look into defensive end, now a lot of teams, you're starting to see more teams get into the 3-4 system. So a lot of players that played the defensive end in college in a more natural 4-3 are being drafted as as outside linebackers, to come off the ball as a pass rusher in a 3-4. What I want to do is I want to rank, I want to know your feelings on the rankings of the combination of defensive end or offensive, outside linebackers. Who do you
All right.
have as your number one guy?
My number one guy for the 3-4 outside linebacker, I have Deion Jordan out of Oregon. He's a tall, lanky kid. Athletic, he's shown the ability to cover, but he doesn't actually have a whole lot of results sacking a quarterback. I think he's going to need to work on his game. He's a raw prospect, so he's going to need some coaching. After him, I have Jarvis Jones. That's a guy who has a whole lot of results sacking a quarterback. Barkevius Mingo from LSU, Demondre Moore at number four. From Texas A&M.
I like you. I have Deion Jordan as my number one guy. The only thing that worries me about him is his lack of production in college. His measurables are just off the chart. And 6'6". 250, runs a 4.6, and probably plays even faster than a 4.6, which is scary. I think he's a perfect fit for either Jacksonville at 2 or Philly at 4.
My number two guy is Barkevious Mingo out of LSU. His versatility, he played a lot of D-end in college. He's probably projected to be an outside linebacker in the NFL game. But he's someone who Les Miles asked to drop into coverage even from the defensive end spot. So I love his versatility. I just think he needs to add more bulk before he comes into the year this year. I have Ziggy Ansah as my number three guy. He reminds me a lot of Jason Pierre-Paul with his lack of years playing football, but combine that with his overall physical raw ability. I have Jarvis Jones as my number four. And that I originally had him as my number two guy. But when you run a 4.91, now I know he plays faster than that on tape, but he ran a 4.91 in the 40, and that's just not something that is going to play out well in my mind. And I have Bjorn Werner as my number five guy, which right behind him, I actually have his teammate, Cornelius Tank Carradine, who had a more productive year this year at Florida. If you want to call in, give us your take on some of the NFL draft. Give us a call, 760-283-0846. Once again, 760-283-0846. You can join the conversation. Let us know where you think, what you think your team needs and who they may draft in the first round this week. I can't believe it's only 4 days away. I love it.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get into inside linebackers. Now, this is one of the weirder years that it's been for inside linebackers. There is not one that sticks out above everybody when it comes to on the field. But when it comes to off the field, there's only one guy that everyone talks about. Let me know what you think about Manti Te'o.
I mean, he looks like a strong physical player, you know, get in the middle of the deep. I kind of like him as a before inside linebacker, maybe cover off some of his lack of speed. I mean, well, maybe I should say lack of, like, ideal speed or extreme speed. Someone who's strong enough and big enough to really take on a blocker and shed to get to the ball carrier, as well as his leadership abilities.
So I have Te'o ranked as my number one inside linebacker. I know it may seem like it's a homer pick because I am a Notre Dame guy, but watching what he brings to the team, both on and off the field, and everyone's going to question his off-the-field attributes, but there is no one that commanded more respect and who was given more respect at the college level than Manti Te'o when it comes to the defensive side of the ball. He came into the year without an interception. So that's why you hear a lot of people question his ability to cover.
Yeah,
but he had seven
when you walk through here, you got to step over the line.
He had seven interceptions in a year that ended up with him being the runner-up
in the Heisman Trophy. He is a sideline-to-sideline player. He ran 4.82 at the combine. He ran 4.71 at his pro day. He plays more like a 4.71 than a 4.82. What he's going to need to show in the NFL is coming off blocks from the offensive linemen, getting in at the second level. It's something that a lot of linebackers have a tough time adjusting to. I don't think he will have too hard of a time adjusting because of that. Second on my board is Alex Ogletree out of Georgia. He played inside linebacker in college. In some systems, he may be looked at as an outside linebacker. Where do you think Ogletree fits in?
I think Ogletree is athletic enough to kind of be successful in multiple systems. At the same time, he's kind of slight of build. If it's like a Tampa 2, where you want your linebacker to drop into coverage a lot, I think he could do that. If you're playing like a more conventional 4-3 defense, I think he'd be maybe, you know, your stronger, your will. I don't think he could hold up in a 4-3 middle linebacker like a traditional 4-3. And then he's played in a 3-4 at college. He could probably play any of the positions in this 3-4, substituting as a pass rusher when necessary. I don't think he's got the strength to be an every down pass rusher like an outside linebacker in a 3-4, but I think he could definitely on a play basis, you know, get in there, provide some pass rush. He does have some off-field issues that need to be addressed, though.
Right. The week leading up to the combine, he had a DUI. And there are a lot of people who think he's got top 10 talent, but seventh round head.
Yeah.
And it's going to take – and you see a team like the Giants, who definitely have a need at the position that he plays, they sort of don't have a problem taking a guy who's had some off-the-field issues because they feel that they have the support staff within the coaching system and the on-the-field leaders to help them with those off-the-field issues. So I do think he is a good fit for the Giants at 19 if DJ Fluker is off the board. Rounding out the middle linebackers, my number three guy is Kevin Minter from LSU. I love what he brings to the table. I have then Arthur Brown Jr. From Kansas State. And then I have John Bostic from Florida. Moving into cornerbacks real quickly before we get into our mock draft. I have D. Milner as my number one guy out of Alabama. And we were talking off the air about my number two guy. Someone who had one of the freakiest injuries that you'll ever see. I have DJ Hayden out of Houston. Here's a guy who in practice this past November, him and a teammate went up for an interception. Teammate's knee hits him in the chest. He thinks he lost, he just got the wind knocked out of him. Starts to see stars and it gets a little dizzy, so they bring him to the hospital.
and it turns out that his inferior vena cava, which is the vein that brings blood back into the heart, ruptured off of the heart. It's an injury that if it happens 95% of the time, a person dies. He survives and was cleared to play, and then he goes out and runs a sub-4.4 40 at the combine. I have him as my number two guy. He did his junior year. He led the nation in interceptions, and I think he, as long as he gets cleared by NFL doctors, he may end up being the top cornerback in the draft. I have Xavier Rhodes as my number three guy. I have Desmond Trufant as my number four guy. And I have Jamar Taylor out of Boise State as my number five. Who do you have as your top five?
Well, four out of the five names are about the same. I think you know which guy's not on my draft board. DJ Hayden, we've talked about it a lot. I wouldn't touch him at all. I mean, I don't want to be the team that has the first player die on the football field. That injury is that's pretty scary. I wouldn't personally draft him. I know he's got the physical talent. I know he's got the head for the game to be successful, but I don't want him to get in a collision, special teams, or, something silly. Maybe he goes in to tackle a running back, and the whole idea scares me. I mean, there's three scar tissue inside the vena cava where the original injury occurred. It's never going to be as strong as it originally was. I'm not a doctor, so I mean, don't take what I'm saying completely and totally earnestly. It scares me. So I would not touch DJ Hayden. To fill out my top five, I have Rhodes, two, Trufant, three, Jamar Taylor, four. And then at number five, I have a tie here, Banks and Slay, the two Mississippi State guys. I feel like one is a better zone guy, one's a better man coverage guy. So I have them tied at five.
All right, and we actually have a guest on the line. Joining us right now, we have Nate Schneider, who covers Central Michigan football, to talk a little Eric Fisher. Nate, thanks for taking a couple minutes today.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
Hi, welcome.
A little bit into what Eric Fisher brings onto the field when it comes to stability at the left tackle position.
You know, he's a great pass blocker. I think he's just a big guy. That's first and foremost. He's about 6'7", 6'8", 305, close to 310. And he's probably got room to put on about 10, 15 more pounds from there maybe. But, yeah, he's just a great pass blocker, great foot movement, and you know, he's a guy that really in the last 2 years has just made huge strides. And when he came out of high school, he's a 250-pound tackle. Since then, he's obviously put on 60 pounds, a lot of muscle, and he's just a guy that's really, really good blocker. I think his pass blocking at this point is a little bit ahead of his run blocking, but seeing he had a running back that ran for 1,500 yards this year, zero on Tipton, so he was heavily involved in the run blocking too, and he really just gets off the ball well, good foot movement. I think he's really that left tackle that teams are looking for to be kind of a centerpiece of the line, offensive line for years to come.
Now, one question about him is that he didn't really face a higher level of caliber player that he's going to face in the NFL. Do you think he'll be able to take that big step coming from where he played at Central Michigan into the role in the NFL?
I think so. I mean, he did go against Golson against Michigan State, played fairly well in that game, and then really where he made his biggest stride as far as draft projection was in that Senior Bowl, where he did go against some of the best defensive ends coming out this year, and then he really did a great job in that game and into the combine. So I really think it's going to there might be a little bit of transition period, obviously, as a rookie, a second-year player, kind of getting used to the NFL-quality defensive ends. But I think, really, eventually he's going to be that staple piece as, at left tackle.
Tell us a little bit about Eric Fisher off the field.
Excuse me? Sorry, I didn't catch that.
Tell us a little bit about Eric Fisher off the field.
Oh, he's a great guy. I mean, he's not a big talker. He's kind of a quiet guy that just goes about his business. But I think really his kind of media attention's been drawn to him these last 2 or 3 months. He's really he's answered all the questions correctly and really going about his business. And he's just a hard worker, that kid that really he wants to be a top five pick and prove himself to teams. And I think any team that does draft him is going to have a high character guy and someone that's really going to going to be a nice addition to their team.
John, you have a question for Nate?
No, not at this time.
take us a little bit into any other potential Central Michigan players that could be drafted.
There is one, Jaleel Adai, a safety. He's a guy that could maybe go in somewhere between maybe the 5th and 7th round if he does get drafted. He's a good ball hawk at CMU. Just a good guy to really create turnovers. Was in the backfield a lot. They played him closer to the line at times, and he's a guy that could go in the later rounds. I'm not exactly sure if he's going to get drafted, but there's potential for him to go in one of those later rounds.
Is there anyone on the team that may be projected to be players in the NFL maybe in next year's draft or the year after?
I'd say one would be Zerline Tipton, the running back. He ran for 1,500 yards, had 300 yards receiving, 20 touchdowns this past year. He'll be a senior this next year. And he's got a big body. He goes about 220, 225. And he can get to the edge. And he's a kid that could really – I think I would maybe compare him maybe to Lawrence Maroney coming out of Minnesota some years back. He kind of has that makeup and build and running style.
All right, well, Nate, if you want to let everyone know where they can find you, maybe on Twitter or where you write.
Yep, my Twitter handle is Nate J. Schneider, and then on our website is themorningsun.com.
All right, Nate Schneider, thank you very much for giving us a couple minutes.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, thank you.
Some nice input as to Eric Fisher. He seemed to think that Eric Fisher is already ahead of his game in pass blocking than he is in run blocking.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised to hear that. Like, when I see Fisher on tape, you know, it really stands out how physical he is, how much bigger he is than his opponents, and how he just really stands out as a pass blocker, as a run blocker.
All right, well, here's what you've all been waiting for. We are going to get into our live mock draft. We're going to alternate picks. I will take the odd number picks. John will take the even number picks. What we are going to do is we are going to throw the Jets into the 13 spot because it's pretty much guaranteed that the Jets are going to be receiving at least the number one pick from Tampa Bay in this year's draft in the potential Darrelle Revis trade, which sounds like it's going to happen either tonight or tomorrow. So I will start off, and I will be picking for the Kansas City Chiefs. And with the first overall pick, the Kansas City Chiefs select Luke Jokel out of Texas A&M, left tackle.
All right. Whoopsie daisy. Tripped over my computer wire. Number two, Jacksonville Jaguars select Sharif Floyd out of Florida. Google product.
Wow, that throws that throws a curveball into everything the Oakland Raiders were hoping.
Yeah.
So with this is now going against everything that I've had to work with.
Yeah, see, we're going to switch it all up, you know, make it a little uncomfortable, you know.
With the number three pick, we'll have the Oakland Raiders go Star Lotulelei, defensive tackle from Utah.
All right. I'm just trying to write this down, keep myself organized. Philadelphia is at four. The top two tackles are off the board, and Coach Kelly's looking at his former pupil, Deion Jordan, come in, play the L position in the new 3-4 defense.
Wow, Deion Jordan. So right now the Cardinals are liking what they see. With the number five pick, I think there's only two people that or three players that the Detroit Lions have on their board that they're even going to think about picking. All three are available here. I think it's either going to be Eric Fisher, Lane Johnson, or D. Milner. I will have them taking Eric Fisher, offensive tackle from Central Michigan.
Nice local kid coming in.
Yep.
And the fans. The nice thing with Fisher there is that he could probably play either tackle, you know, considering they've got Riley Reiff there from last year's draft. So number six, Cleveland. They need a bookend for Joe Hayden out there in the secondary. Sheldon Brown's getting older and is not as effective as he once was. Cleveland Brown selects D. Milner.
And the Arizona Cardinals, who we had been saying, if they're going to get one of their offensive tackles, they're going to need to trade up. They're going to need to trade up. There's no way one of the three falls to them, and one of the three falls. So I think that this pick takes about 2 seconds to make. The Arizona Cardinals select Lane Johnson, offensive tackle out of Oklahoma.
All right. He's probably one of my favorite players this year's draft. So, number eight, Buffalo. They've got
Buffalo.
Geno Smith looking right at him. Ryan Nassib up there, too. I think it's way too high for a quarterback to go. And I don't know. I really like the idea of them going Chance Formack.
Chance
so I'm going to go there.
And you do realize that, maybe not. We'll see. I think the Jets see what's on the board. And I think the only pick that they feel comfortable with right now is Barcavius Mingo, defensive end, outside linebacker out of LSU.
Okay. Team. So, Tennessee is sitting there at 10. They have needs on their offensive line. They have needs on their defensive line. Considering they're at the bottom of their division, and they play against some top quarterbacks like Andrew Luck, who's only going to get better, Matt Schaub, and who's the other guy there? But anyway, they're going to go with Ziggy Ansah and fill out that defensive end position.
Ziggy Ezekiel Ansah. The San Diego Chargers are now on the clock, and they're another one of those teams that you may look into possibly trading up to grab one of the top three offensive linemen. But they're another one of those teams that needs help all over the offensive line, not just at the tackle. And I will have them taking Jonathan Cooper, offensive guard out of North Carolina.
So we've got two guards off the board in the first 11 picks.
Yeah.
Nice. I love my linemen, so this makes me happy. Miami coming into this offseason, everyone said they got to go wide receiver. They got to get Tannehill a weapon. And, I mean, I don't think there was any team except maybe Indianapolis to be more active in free agency with their with Mike Wallace on board now. So at this point, they could really take anybody, best player available, and the team need would probably be Xavier Rhodes. And so that's where I'm going to have them go.
Xavier Rhodes. All right, so now we have the Jets back on the clock. They just traded Darrell Revis for this pick, plus more possibly. We're waiting for the official word to come out. And this just seems like a typical Jets move. It's a move that I wouldn't recommend, but I can see the Jets doing this. I will have the Jets taking Geno Smith, quarterback out of West Virginia.
Oh, wow. That'll not make it a circus out there in New York.
Oh, my
Jets
God.
Land.
That'll be the 14th quarterback that they're bringing into camp.
Yeah, and I think one of our friends will have a heart attack when he sees that pick on the board. Yeesh. All right. Carolina Panthers, they're up. they've been talking about defensive tackle need out there for a long time. They have a couple nice defensive pieces there. But I'm actually going to go with Desmond Trufant at this position, considering the depth available at defensive tackle this year.
Desmond Trufant. I love Trufant. I love his.
Yeah,
especially you're looking at the way that the Seattle Seahawks played their defensive back this year. They got the big, athletic, strong cornerbacks, and Desmond Trufant definitely is one of those.
Yep.
All right, so now we are sitting at number 15 with the New Orleans Saints. I see the Saints as being a team that can trade down, especially because they don't have their second-round pick because of the bounty scandal. But if they do stay in this pick, they need help all over the defense. And I will have them taking Sheldon Richardson, defensive tackle out of Missouri.
And so where would you have Richardson play there? Is he going to be a defensive end?
No, you know what? That's right.
So
the Saints are moving
now,
to a 3-4 with Rob Ryan coming in. You know what? Just like the Saints, I'm gonna take that one back. Just like they
okay.
wish they took the bounty back. I will have them taking Jarvis Jones, outside linebacker out of Georgia.
Okay. Because I like Richardson's as a 3-4 end also. But yeah, Jones. Where am I? San Fran?
We're at 16 with the Rams.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just trying to write out everything. So 16 with the Rams, I think this has been kind of the consensus of most mock drafts. Kenny Vaccaro, the safety.
Kenny Vaccaro, safety out of Texas.
Yeah.
And that moves us to 17 with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I think of all the teams in the draft, I know I just took Jarvis Jones at 15 with the Saints, but I think he fits in best with the Steelers. But unfortunately, he's not on the board right now. They lost Mike Wallace in free agency. I think they take Tavon Austin, wide receiver out of West Virginia.
Yeah, and I like that pick considering they're going to have to pay Emmanuel Sanders a lot of money next year. Tavon Austin's a better talent. I think that's a really solid pick
yeah.
right there. So Dallas is on the board. They're switching to a 4-3 defense.
Yeah.
So they technically, or they could use a some help on the defensive tackle side. They need a little bit of help on offensive tackle, or all over the offensive line, really. So I'm going to go with that best player available this time, and I'm going to take... I'm going to take Sheldon Richardson.
Yeah. That's who I had penciled into Dallas. And which brings me to the Giants, into a spot that I didn't want, because I was hoping that either one of Alec Ogletree or DJ Fluker would be off the board, so it would make my decision easier. The Giants did bring in Dan Connor, but they still need a Sam linebacker because they are moving Matthias Kiwanuka back to defensive end. If I'm Jerry Reese right here, I'm making as many calls to trade back as I can, but if I can't, I am going to take DJ Fluker, right tackle out of Alabama.
Nice. And that gets the Giants back to that run-heavy offense that they like. So, Chicago's on the board. And Chicago's had offensive line problems forever. But Fluker's gone. Let me see here.
Well, they did just sign Bushrod.
Jermon Bushrod, yeah.
So, I don't know if that's such a huge need right now.
Yeah.
What do you see as other needs being for the Chicago Bears?
The Chicago, well, linebacker, they've lost Roach, and they've lost Urlacher. So Ogletree is definitely someone they'd be interested in. The other thing I was thinking is maybe cornerback, maybe someone like Jamar Taylor, considering he's the guys they have now are getting up in age. I think probably, though, I'll go with Ogletree.
Alec Ogletree.
Yeah.
All right, which brings us to pick number 21. Let's recap the top 20. We had the Kansas City Chiefs taking Luke Jokel. We had the Jaguars with Sharif Floyd. The Raiders taking Star Latulele. The Eagles with Deion Jordan. The Lions with Eric Fisher. At 6, we have the Cleveland Browns selecting D. Milner. At 7, we have the Cardinals taking Lane Johnson. Buffalo Bills taking Chance Warmack out of Alabama. At 9, we have the Jets taking Bartavius Mingo from LSU. At number 10, Ziggy Ansah comes off the board to the Tennessee Titans. 11, the Chargers take Jonathan Cooper. 12, the Dolphins take Xavier Rhodes. Then we have the Jets, who we are all assuming just acquired the 13 pick for Darrell Revis, shocking everybody, taking Geno Smith. We have the Carolina Panthers taking Desmond Trufant at 14. We have the Saints taking Jarvis Jones at 15. 16 is the Rams with Kenny Vaccaro, the safety out of Texas. The Steelers trying to replace Mike Wallace by taking Tavon Austin, wide receiver out of West Virginia. The Cowboys shoring up their defensive line with Sheldon Richardson. The Giants taking DJ Fluker, to anchor the right side of their offensive line, and the Bears taking Alec Ogletree to maybe fill in for the departed Brian Urlacher. So now we're on the board with Cincy at 21. I think Cincy is the most complete team in the AFC North. I think they are primed to take over that division. They don't have many holes, but one that they do have is at safety. And I will actually take Eric Reed, the safety out of LSU, to the Cincinnati Bengals.
Nice. So St. Louis is back on the board. They lost their top two wide receivers this offseason. Eventually, they got to provide somebody for Sam Bradford to throw to. They filled offensive tackle with the signing of Jake Long. Considering team need and also talent available, I'm going to take Colby Patterson.
All right, Cordarrelle Patterson comes off the board.
I was trying to remember that first name.
which brings us to the Minnesota Vikings at 23. They need help up the middle on their defense. I think the last name just absolutely fits in perfectly. For the Vikings, I have them taking Sylvester Williams, the defensive tackle out of North Carolina.
And he's a great player, I really like. Sly Williams. So Indianapolis is back on the board. This is another team that's moved over to the 3-4 defense. The first mock draft, I had them taking DeMontre Moore, and I'm kind of thinking that, leaning that way. But with all the talent available at wide receiver, I'm kind of considering something else. Well, I'm going to go with my board, and I'm going to take DeMontre Moore.
DeMontre Moore, the second Aggie off the board.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings us back to the Minnesota Vikings. I just picked Sylvester Williams to shore up the defensive line. Middle linebacker is a need of theirs. And I will take Manti Te'o from Notre Dame to go to Minnesota. Which brings us to 26, and what a soft spot in your heart, the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, my 1B team. Green Bay has a pretty solid player at Morgan Burnett at the safety position. They let go of Charles Woodson this last offseason, so I'm going to have him take Elam, the safety from Florida.
I love
this
that
position
pick
here.
Another one that I would look into that I think the Packers may go is Justin Pugh from Syracuse. I like his versatility on the defensive line. But Elam is offensive line, yes.
Yeah.
But Elam is, especially with Charles Woodson being a free agent and them not bringing him back, Matt Elam is a great fit there. 27, we have the Houston Texans. They have been searching for the number two wide receiver to play opposite Andre Johnson for a while. To me, it's down to two players. It's going to be between Keenan Allen and Robert Woods. I will take Keenan Allen out of Cal.
All right. Well, Denver needs to fill Elvis Dumervil's old position, and they're going to take the young man from Florida who's been just free-falling so far this draft. They're going to select Bjorn Werner, the defensive end.
Florida State. Yeah, that's it. My last mock draft, that's exactly where I had Bjorn Werner going to as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
well,
it's crazy.
Picking up steam right now.
Yeah, and it's crazy because Bjorn Werner, at times during the season last year, people were slotting him into the top five.
I mean, in January, he was the number two selection to Jacksonville.
Yep. That brings us to 29 with the New England Patriots. And I'm going to stick with what I have in my last mock draft, with them taking Jamar Taylor, cornerback out of Boise State.
Oh, man, I was hoping he'd make it to Atlanta.
If he falls to Atlanta, I don't see any way he gets past him.
He'd be a perfect pick in Atlanta. All right, so Atlanta's on the board. Atlanta's been close, but close enough the last couple of years. They definitely need to get a little more nasty on the defense. I'm going to have them go with, just looking through the guys available.
If DeMontre Moore falls here, I also love that fit.
Yeah.
But he's already off the board.
Yeah. I'm going to have them take Tank Carradine, a guy whose name has been quite popular lately.
That is a solid pick. It brings us to the 49ers at 31. I have the feeling that the 49ers are going to package this pick and either one of their other second-round picks, because they do have the second pick in the second round from the Alex Smith trade. I think they will package to move up in the draft. I have them in my last mock trading up the 31 and the 34 up to 15 to take Kenny Vaccaro. But if they are in this spot, I think they can use players at any number position. I do like them taking a safety. I don't know if there are any safeties available that will help them. So I think they end up also going maybe offensive line. Or even defensive line. And how about this? We'll go Jesse Williams, nose tackle, out of Alabama.
Nice. And that's a player who at Alabama used to carry the ball a few times in the red zone in that power offense. Something that Coach Harbaugh might like. I'm not going to say John or Jim because I can't remember which one. I'm safe saying Coach Harbaugh. So Baltimore, the reigning Super Bowl champions, my AFC team, for anyone who's concerned, they've lost a lot of leadership this last couple months on the defensive side of the ball. So I have them taking Kevin Minter, middle linebacker out of LSU, come in there and solidify that 3-4 defense.
All right, so wrapping up the bottom half of the first round, we had Eric Reed, the safety, out of LSU, going to Cincy at 21. The Rams taking their wide receiver of the future, Cordarrelle Patterson. The Vikings taking Sylvester Williams, continuing the Williams defensive tackle trait up there in Minnesota. At 24, the Colts take DeMontre Moore, defensive end out of Texas A&M. Minnesota then back on the board. They had that pick because of the Percy Harvin trade to Seattle. and they took Manti Te'o, linebacker out of Notre Dame. The Packers take Florida Gators safety Matt Elam. The Texans took wide receiver Keenan Allen out of Cal. The Broncos select Bjorn Werner, defensive end out of Florida State. The Patriots took Jamar Taylor, cornerback from Boise State. Another Seminole defensive end comes off the board at 30 to the Falcons. We have Tank Carradine at 31. The 49ers select Jesse Williams, nose tackle out of Alabama. And the Ravens shore up their linebacking core by taking Kevin Minter, another LSU Tiger, off the board. John, what a wonderful show. I want to thank you for taking the time this morning. I will see you in New York this week, where we will be taking in the NFL draft. Just one of our absolute favorite times of the year. And give us your, we get into our sound off portion of the game, I'm going to ask you for your favorite draft moment.
Favorite draft moment? I think it was the night before the 07 draft, when it was like you, me, and another guy, and we were all just going on and on about Calvin Johnson and how Detroit couldn't take another wide receiver in the top five. And they ended up doing it and ended up being the best wide receiver they took in the top five. But that was probably one of the most – that was probably the most fun I had. And then, you know, going – you know, staying up, staying out all night, waiting for our tickets. That was the 07 draft. That was definitely my favorite moment.
Yeah, the 07 draft was the first draft that we attended together. And great memories. And my sound off of my favorite moment was going to be being on the red carpet last year. NFL Network and ESPN had the red carpet pre-show. I was lucky enough to be able to be there and get to see all of these players just come and walk by, and getting to see someone the aura about him, that was Andrew Luck. He just seemed to walk in with this confidence, and it wasn't like the cockiness or swagger. It was just confident, and how generous he was to everybody that was on the red carpet. He took time to stop and say hello to everybody, and I became a huge fan of Andrew Luck last year, and I was happy to see the success he had in Indianapolis.
That's awesome.
So for John Falcone, this is Ryan Stern. You can find me at or Stern BSP on Twitter. This has been Real Sports Talk Radio, brought to you by BackSportsPage.com.
Thanks very much. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah. All right. Have a good one, everybody.